2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And Governor, it's been an emotional few minutes for us here at KSL, and I'm watching our texters. It's been emotional for them as well. They are sending in tributes for Dick Norse. We learned just a few minutes ago that the longtime Channel 5 anchor has passed at the age of 83, and I have been a little bit emotional, Governor. I worked with Dick for many, many years, and, you know, like so many others, you know, just trusted him, his credibility in the news. So your reaction this morning?
Well, obviously, it's a somber moment here at the headquarters at KSL for you who work so closely with him, but for all of us. I grew up in a house where KSL was what we did. It's what we watched. That's how I got connected to the news of the day when I was a kid. I mean, he was an institution. I think he over 40 years that he was on air, second longest broadcaster in the nation. Growing up, it was him and Bob Welty and mm-hmm. and Paul James, right?
Yes.
Yeah, those
mm-hmm.
three guys. That's my entire life until that's all I knew. And so he's been the face of Utah news. Every breaking news, every big thing that happened over the course of his life. I mean, a guy who went to Vietnam to interview Utahns before I was born, but I saw those clips many years later, and it was impactful. And so this is a hard day for obviously harder for those of you who were so close to him, but an institution in Utah has passed on, and I think your texters, I think all of us. I'm not the governor when it comes to him. I'm just the kid who sat with my parents every night and listened to his voice, that deep kind of lion voice that brought me the news and kept me interested in current events.
Right. I mentioned too, as you walked in, like today, I'm just me too, because it's hard to be objective when someone close to you, someone in the KSL family, has passed on.
It is. And again, somebody that had such a kind of an outsized influence on all of us, right? Obviously an outsized influence on you. And I will tell you, the thing that impresses me the most, Maria, about Dick, it's not how long he was on TV. It's not how larger than life he was for me and everybody who was here in Utah, but it's the reaction of the people that knew him best, because that says to me that he was a good person with everybody that he interacted with. I've met him. I didn't interact with him much. By the time I was lieutenant governor, he had retired, but he's still the face of this institution of KSL. But to see you and your colleagues and just the impact that his loss has on you tells me everything I need to know about Dick Norse.
A very thoughtful, sensitive, caring person. And I've enjoyed interacting with him on Facebook since he retired. So, Governor, this is the hour that our listeners have with you to really address the important issues of the day in the state of Utah. Yesterday, the legislature went ahead and extended your emergency declaration for flooding. So start out and just describe what exactly that means, where that money will go, and what you're most concerned about.
Sure. And by the way, if callers just want to call in and tell stories about how amazing Dick Norris is too, I would love to hear those. I'm grateful for the legislature who was able to help us. There were a couple things that we needed to do with that money. One, we spent more money than we had anticipated on snow plowing and avalanche control. And that was to be expected when you have a record year. And so the legislature was able to move some money into those categories to help us. We were able to get an additional allocation of money to help with the flooding that's happening across the state, to be able to reimburse cities and towns who are expending more than usual for the floods that are happening out there. And I'm just very grateful for the legislature. They extended the emergency declaration that I issued. They gave us a 90-day extension on that, which will be very helpful as well as we continue to fight these floods, working with the federal government. It's a great problem to have after years and years of drought. We'll take it, but it's still an issue. The next couple of weeks will really challenge some of our infrastructure, especially in central and northern Utah. Most of the runoff in southern Utah is completed, but the northern Utah runoff, we're probably only about halfway there in many places. So a lot of water still left to come down, but we're working very closely with our colleagues, our emergency managers across the state to make sure that we're keeping people safe.
As a part of that legislation, legislature is asking you for you to keep them updated regularly. Describe what is behind that. Are you being punished for things that happened during COVID, or what exactly is happening there?
Oh no! Great question, and no punishment at all. In fact, we had planned to give them regular updates, regardless of whether that was included or not. I probably would have updated them more often than every 30 days. Anyway, it's really important for people to understand that that emergency powers are legislative powers that they've delegated to the executive branch, and I guard those powers very, very jealously because they are their powers, and I should not overuse them. I should be very cautious, and when I do use them, I should communicate regularly with the legislature, which we do. If you were to ask the Speaker and President if they were here today, they would say that there are no issues whatsoever. We're in good shape. Certainly, there are people out there who are concerned about emergency powers, and we saw that. I think there were some abuses in some states and maybe at the federal government level as well. I think we've done a pretty good job here in the state of Utah, and we'll continue to do so. And so updating the legislature is critical. It's part of what my job is. It's part of what we've tried to do as an executive branch over the past couple of years. And so we actually encourage them to add that in there so that it would assuage any fears that anybody else might have.
Challenging season. We've had flooding concerns. We have landslide concerns. Utah Geological Survey has said that they are very concerned about this kind of updating, or saying that they are more concerned about it, rather. So what keeps you up at night when you hear some of these things and them saying, hey, the risk is greater than we thought?
Yeah, there's so many things that keep me up at night. It's part of being governor, but mostly I'm grateful for the people that we have in place. We've been preparing for this because the nice thing about this type of emergency, this type of natural disaster, is that you can see it coming, right? We knew that there was an excess of water in those mountains, 30 inches. 26 is the greatest we've ever recorded. So to have 30 inches of water in that snowpack on the mountain, we knew what was coming. So we have been preparing for this. We got $5 million ahead of time so that we could be ready for this. And we're watching those you mentioned the U.S. Geological Survey. We're watching those landslides very closely. We can anticipate with temperatures the amount of water that's coming down, and we've done a pretty good job of doing that, getting sandbags where they need to go. But landslides are a little trickier. We can see them starting. They move very slowly. If they move quickly, like Thistle happened, 40 years ago, people remember the big landslide in Thistle that dammed off water. Those things worry me because there's usually very little notice. And in that case, what happened was it dammed off a river. Then the water backs up behind the river, and eventually that dam breaks, and then you can wash away Spanish Fork, right? Mm-hmm. That was the concern back then. So those things certainly make me concerned. We are monitoring over 100 landslide-prone areas right now in the state, and I'll sleep a lot better once all of that snow is in our reservoirs.
You mentioned how you will regularly update the legislature, but maybe you could describe what happens behind the scenes and how you find out about the latest information on landslides and flooding potential.
Sure. Yeah. Happy to do that. So we have a system of emergency managers across the state. And of course, I have a commissioner of public safety, and all of those entities report back and then report up to him. And we have all of our emergency managers who are working on this. I get an update every single day. So when I wake up in the morning, there is an email in my inbox that talks about every region of our state, every place that is flooding, every place that there's a concern with a dam breaching or a landslide, and I review that. So I'm getting updates every single morning. And then if something happens during the course of the day, if something moves a little quicker, that's immediately reported back. We have an emergency operations center that it is you know, a little bit like the military. There are varying degrees of operations happening. So as things get a little more tenuous, a little more dicey, we up the level on that, and we're at a high level now, and so they are constantly monitoring. We have cameras that are being put out in different areas to monitor dams and bridges. There's one we're watching very closely down in Spanish Fork. There's a bridge that I-15 travels over where the Spanish Fork River goes under towards Utah Lake, and it has been within 6 inches of the top of that bridge, and shutting down I-15 obviously would be one of the most concerning things that we could do in the state. So that's one we've been watching very, very closely, and so I'm getting updates very regularly. I'll probably get a couple updates while we're sitting here talking.
All right. Phone calls are starting to come in. Text questions are coming in. The number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Get your questions answered by Governor Spencer Cox. Call 801-575-8255 to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaios, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Again, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. And let's go to our phone lines. Ari is on the line from Draper. And good afternoon, Ari. What is your question?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I know the governor is someone that still values facts, and I just wanted to cite a couple of them. You know, there's in this country, I think there's somewhere, you know, and knows the exact number, between 400 and 450 million guns, you know, per capita. We have, I think, twice as many guns per capita as the nearest nation, and that's the peaceful nation of Yemen. You know, we account for about 4% of the world's population, you know, some 35% of, you know, global firearm suicides. And then we're about, if you live in this country, as you and I do, Governor, you're about 25 times more likely to be killed in a gun homicide than people in other high-income countries. You know, I know you often lament, and somewhat appropriately so, that politics has become our God and not, you know, God, you know, him or herself. You know, I would argue that for Republicans, besides attacking democracy, the only God, it seems to matter, is guns. And there just seems to be no willingness to address the epidemic of gun deaths in this country, mass murders, everything else, suicides. You're 25 times more likely to die, you know, from a gun than other countries. Even in countries, you know, that people perceive as, you know, as having issues like Israel, you're some 12 times more likely to die from a gun in this country than you are in Israel, and some 50 times the case in the UK. So, you know, what will it take for Republicans to abandon their God, guns? Thank you.
Ari, thanks for the question, and certainly share your concern about the tragic deaths that we've seen across the country. Some of the very high profile ones recently that have been devastating to communities, and I think this is something that every state and of course our federal government is trying to grapple with. And I wish I had better answers. This is back to the earlier segment. One of the things that certainly keeps me up at night. We do have a Second Amendment here, and I think in Utah we've tried to figure out how to balance those Second Amendment rights with keeping people safe. And I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment, but with that Second Amendment comes responsibility as well. And I fear we are losing that as a nation. I've shared this before. You know, when I was growing up, I had a gun in my vehicle almost every day my junior and senior year of high school. I would take the truck to school. I would have my shotgun, my 22 or my 30-06, depending on what the hunting season was that year. And yet we had a very deep respect for those weapons. We were trained. We were taught that you never pointed a weapon at anything or anyone unless you were, again, actively hunting. There was a responsibility that went along with that. And I think we're sadly losing that in kind of a gun culture. In red states and blue states, I think we're seeing that across the board, and it's leading to some tragic consequences. There are some things that we're trying to do in this state to keep people safe. I will again always work to protect the Second Amendment, but we are working. We just passed. It didn't get a lot of attention, but the most comprehensive school safety bill that we have had in our state's history. A new position that will be working with schools. Every school in the state to implement best practices in those schools. We have $70 million for additional resources and resource officers in those schools. We have the Safe UT app, which has been a significant help to local schools and law enforcement officials to make sure that we're doing more to keep our schools safe. But I certainly hope that again, the root causes, I'm very interested in the root causes. What are leading people to take these heinous acts? Those guns just didn't go out and start shooting people. What is it that is causing that? We've seen a significant increase in mental health concerns across the country. We've been working. You mentioned suicide. You brought that up several times. Of course, that's a big issue for the state of Utah. We have been working on this. Governor Herbert asked me to start the Governor Suicide Prevention Task Force, the first of its kind in our state. We've been working with the legislature over the course of the past 6 years to change that piece and to get more resources and help available. I saw just this week we've moved. When we started that task force, we were fifth in the nation for the number of suicides per capita. Now we're 14th in the nation, so we're heading the right way. But one of the reasons we're improving there is because other states are getting worse. And so there's a lot more that we have to do there, and I appreciate your concern.
Our first texter actually is asking about mental health, Governor, and they want to know when you're going to do something about mental health. What else can we do, Governor?
Are we going to start doing something about it?
Well, their focus is on prevention. Well, they would say
sure.
They're pushing for more prevention, and they're wondering what you can do.
Yeah,
I
hope you would pay attention. See, again, this is the problem that happens. We passed 575 bills, and people only pay attention to five of them because those were the controversial ones. You've missed probably the 40 bills and millions and millions and millions of dollars that we've put toward mental health care in this state. Yesterday I was meeting with some of our team that are looking at the entire mental health care system in our state and how we can realign that in ways that will help people help more people get more access to mental health care and make sure we're getting better mental health care. So what I would encourage you to do is to go and look at the several bills that passed this year. We are creating new resource centers. senators throughout the state. We've got several of them up. These are tens of millions of dollars for each one. These are access centers. Think about when your child wakes up sick in the middle of the night and you take them to an urgent care, right? A 24-hour facility where you can go and check in and get help. We're building those types of facilities for mental health care in our state as well. So there has never been more done than we've done over the past 5 years. And I would put what we've done over the past 5 years up against any other state. Still a long ways to go, but we're heading in the right direction.
We have just a couple of minutes till the bottom of our news. And I want to ask the next text question. This person would like to hear your take on smart cities and your vision for the type of community down in Draper at the old prison site.
Sure. Well, this term smart cities, I don't know what it means. There's a guy out there who claims that smart cities are digital concentration camps. So there's this big conspiracy theory around smart cities.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's a new one and it's a doozy. But what I can tell you is happening at the point of the mountain is it's a very public process. Obviously, we've moved the prison. That was the idea. There is a board that has been put together. There was an RFP that was held, and a developer that won that RFP is very engaged in designing what that will look like. And the whole idea is to make it again one of the most. I hope it will be one of the most visited spots in Utah after our national parks and Temple Square, that people will come and see this place. And the idea is that it will host, there will be housing there. There will be an entertainment district there. So think potentially sports, think certainly concert venues and movie venues, places where people can go. There will be open space where people can go and recreate as well. And then there will be a core of businesses that get to move in there, because there is no other opportunity like this anywhere in the country right now. We've heard that over and maybe in the world over and over again, where you have 700 acres of green space that has infrastructure, has two freeways on both sides. It is an incredible opportunity. My only concern is that we'll think a little too small on this one. This is the idea again, is that these businesses, and we have had businesses saying, yes, we want to have our headquarters there. We want to build there a place where people can work and people can recreate and people can have the amenities that they need very, very close to them. And it's going to be there's a lot to look forward to. It's going to be a really positive development for the state of Utah.
All right. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. You are listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio. Number to call with your questions, 575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text at 57500. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Nick is on the line in West Jordan, and good morning, Nick. What is your question?
Hi, Governor. So as a moderate Republican, I'm concerned with some of the trends that I'm seeing in other red states. You know, and especially in Florida, where they've kind of developed this mentality of woke goes to die, to quote DeSantis down there. And I'm concerned that, you know, starting our next legislative session, that we are going to develop that mentality here, too. And as a moderate, I just want to make sure that, you know, everybody has a chance to be heard, that we're making sure that we're compromising. And so I want to know kind of like what's being heard or what we're doing to prevent that mentality from gaining traction in Utah.
Nick, thanks for the question. I'm sure there are some listeners that agree with you and probably some listeners who disagree with you. And I think one of the things that we try to do here in the state of Utah, at least I've tried really hard, is to be inclusive in our process and to bring people to the table and to try to find the best result. I'm not the governor of just Republicans, although I am a conservative Republican, but I'm the governor of everyone and want to make sure that those voices are heard. We've worked really closely with the legislature. Obviously, obviously they are a separate and independent branch of government, as they should be. They do invite testimony on hearings and various issues. I've tried to add to that and augment that whenever I can in positive ways. And I think we've done a much better job of coming to a better end result when more people are involved. And I think there are some really great examples of that over the past few years. And we'll continue to do that. I have a deep respect and a great working relationship with the legislature. I agree with them most of the time. Sometimes I don't. And when we don't, we try to find ways to work through those problems. But I do think that what you said is key. And I would say that regardless of whether you're a moderate or an ultra conservative or extremely liberal. And that is, we are better off when we collaborate. We're better off when we work together. We're better off if we can try to find solutions that more people can agree on. There will be times, and there are times when we just can't agree. And in that case, I hope that we will, even if we do something that is disappointing or that some disagree with, that we will do so in a way that shows dignity and respect. And that I think is one something that's lacking in much of the national debate right now, and especially in the culture war areas, which I think that's kind of what you're referring to there, that we can disagree without hating each other, that we can disagree better. I believe, as a friend of mine says, there's nothing more un-American than hating our fellow Americans. And in fact, you're going to hear me talking a little bit more about that over the course of the next year as I get a chance to work with 49 other governors as the chair of the National Governors Association. This idea of disagreeing better, this idea of disagreeing without hating each other, I think it's core to who we are as Americans. I think it's core to the survival of our country. This country was founded on profound disagreement. I don't think we should all just get along in that we have to agree on everything. I think that's a mistake. I really think we're better off when we disagree, but we disagree the right ways. And so I don't always get that right. I sometimes, you know, I sometimes get a little belligerent and a little strong-headed, and I need to be reminded of that too. But we're certainly trying, and I hope you'll see that next legislative session as well.
Governor, this week you joined 23 other Republican governors in supporting Texas Governor Greg Abbott's hardline border security policies. So describe why you felt the need to do so and how Utah might support those efforts.
Yeah, so I've been very frustrated with immigration. In fact, earlier today, this is back to Nick, our previous caller. I got a little fired up, and I'm mad at Congress. I'm mad at Congress because they've abdicated their responsibilities when it comes to immigration over the past 40 years. I'm mad at the current administration and past administrations because they've dropped the ball when it comes to immigration. It's very frustrating. I think I called Congress all imbeciles, and that they should all be fired. I obviously didn't mean that. We have some amazing members of Congress here in the state of Utah, some of my dear friends that I love. This is more of a 40-year frustration. Utah passed comprehensive immigration reform before I was in the legislature 10, 11 years ago, however long it's been. And the Obama administration wouldn't allow us to implement it, and then the Trump administration wouldn't allow us to implement it. So it's very frustrating. This is not hard. It's not hard. It just isn't hard. And Governor Abbott is absolutely within his rights and responsibilities to be very upset with what's happening down there. I feel so bad for our border states. I don't know how they do it. We are an ordered nation, and you cannot just introduce that level of chaos there. And one of the reasons there's so much chaos at the border is because legal immigration is broken. And so it's not that hard of a fix, guys. It really isn't. Secure the border and fix legal immigration. There are lots of proposals to do that. If you let the governors do this, we could solve this in a day. And yet, too many politicians out there get reelected by using immigration as a wedge issue and a dividing issue. And it's one of those rare areas where Republicans and Democrats actually agree, just not the politicians, because solving it would make it harder for them to get reelected.
You've given your vocal support of this. Is there anything else the state of Utah can do?
We had our National Guard was there last year, so we've taken a turn down there. And boy, I just have to give a shout out to our National Guardsmen and women. Those citizen soldiers have worked so hard, and over the past couple of years, we've called on them more than at any time in our state's history. And so we'll be monitoring, having conversations as governors to see what's needed, who's sending what. And again, vocalizing those concerns with hopefully with the administration that will send some more resources and pay attention down there. But they know we have that they have our support, and what that looks like will be determined on what's happening on the border as those numbers increase or decrease over the next few weeks.
Border security impacts us all as a country, but is there anything specific impacts that we see here in Utah?
Sure. Look, I like to say we're all border states right now, and the immigrants that are coming across aren't just staying there, right? They come here, and they're taxing some of our systems. Utah is so big-hearted, and we want to help. We want to help refugees, and we have helped refugees. I don't know any state in the nation that has stepped up more than the state of Utah over the past 10 years when it comes to helping our refugees. But many of these migrants are coming to other states. They're coming to Colorado. They're coming to New York. They're coming to Utah. And so when they get here, what do we do? Well, we have some resettlement agencies here. We have a lot of nonprofits that are really stepping up to help. But it just puts pressure on all of the system, right? We're already short on housing, and we're working to increase housing in the state, but that makes it very difficult. And so it's just a terrible, terrible, terrible system, terrible situation, and everybody knows it needs to be fixed. And sadly, the people with the power to fix it aren't interested.
All right. Jacob is on the line in Spanish Fork. Good afternoon, Jacob. What is your question?
Yes, I was wondering what happened to the bill about gun rights and getting your rights back after 3 years of committing felonies.
Yeah, Jacob, great question. Thanks for that. I think you're referring to House Bill 507. That bill did eventually pass. It was signed into law, but there were some changes made to that. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, you'll need to look this up and check it out. I think it's a 7-year process that you have to go through. It's not in all cases, not all felonies qualify, and there's a process that you have to go through to make that happen. So I would encourage you to look out and get those details. But that's my recollection of that is that it's a 7-year process and only in certain circumstances.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more of your calls. The number to call 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
Governor Spencer Cox is taking your questions right now. Call 801-575-8255 or text him at 57500. This is Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Taking your calls right now, 801-575-8255. Jay is on the line in Murray, and good afternoon. I can't speak today. I got all emotional with Dick Norris, and now none of the words are coming out properly, Governor. Good afternoon, Jay. What is your question?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to why we decided to fly the new state banner over the Capitol when it's not really the state banner until 2024. Who made that decision to fly the, instead of the old one, which is still current and relevant until next year?
Yeah, Jay, good question. It's one I had to ask and figure out. Important to note that the current flag, the historical flag, is still flying over the state capitol and will always fly over the state capitol as long as I'm the governor. I issued an executive order earlier this year that would require the historic flag with the historic seal to fly over the state capitol at all times. So just to be very clear, sure that is still flying there. There's a group called the Capital Preservation Board, and it is made up of legislators. I do not sit on that board, but that board, they are the ones that make all of the decisions at the Capitol and the Capitol grounds. So any, you know, all of the statues that you see there, anything related to flags, those are decisions that are made there. And my understanding is that they voted to put the flag up. There's nothing in the law that prevents that from happening. Anybody can fly the flag at any time. The only thing in the law right now, and again, this is an executive order that I issued, says that the historic flag has to fly on the state capitol, and that the new flag will always fly below the historic flag on the state capitol, so that the historic flag with the historic seal will always take precedent over the new flag. So I hope that clears up any misperceptions. There's a lot of people out there that are saying that the old flag is going away. I don't know why they've decided to share that. That's just not true. This idea that the old flag has been replaced and is going away, it's not. Anyone can fly it at any time. And it's been great to see a whole bunch of people who never paid any attention to the state flag suddenly get really interested in it. And I love seeing more of the historic flag flying across our state. It's also fun for those who like the new flag to see that flying in some places as well.
Governor, our next listener would like to know, what can be done about gas prices? We all want to know this question.
Yeah, yeah.
What can the state do about gas prices?
I wish they let the governor do something right? about gas prices. We would have done it a long time ago. There are some downsides to having the best economy in the nation and a rapidly growing state. The biggest issue is refining of product. So we... our refineries here in the state of Utah are at maximum capacity. So they are refining as much gasoline as they possibly can. They just can't do anymore. And it is not enough to provide gasoline for all of our state, which means that there are more and more gasoline has to be brought from outside the state, and transporting that gasoline here adds to the expense of it. And so you'll see that in places that have very strong economies. You'll also see it states that are closer to California also have higher gas prices because of many of the rules and regulations in California. Not that this gas has to go through those same rules and regulations, but there is a natural pull as they are importing more and more gas. That increases the refining process in other states as well, and all of that leads us to a place where our gas prices are higher than some other places. The obvious answer is to increase refining capacity. Refineries are incredibly expensive. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars. And people, again, in the market that have that kind of money, they're not really interested in building new refineries because we have a federal government that is constantly hammering on oil and gas. And so they're not going to put, you know, billions of dollars into something that won't bring returns for 20 or 30 years when you have a federal government saying, you know, we want everybody off of gasoline in the next 10 years. So it makes it really, really difficult for those states that are caught in the middle. We're still having those conversations. We pushed back on permitting reform. Just yesterday, I was on with a member of the White House working very hard with a bipartisan group of governors to encourage them to increase gas leases, oil and gas leases in our state and across the country, because that's another piece of this as well. But that's the best answer I can give.
All right. Jay is on the line in American Fork. Good afternoon, Jay. What is your question?
Yes, Governor. Thank you for taking our phone calls and texts today. One question I had is just in regards to, there's a bill this past year in regards to possibly having all state employees become at-will employees. I'm wondering if that option will come up again. And if so, if you support that, or what would be the pros and cons of that?
Yeah, thanks. Great question. This is one I haven't been asked about too much. So over the past couple of years, we have passed several bills that have moved more and more state employees to an at-will status. And in conjunction with that, by the way, completely voluntary, where the employee gets to choose, and there is a pay increase that comes with that change in status to becoming at-will. So it's been an opportunity for us to get some more dollars to our wonderful state employees. toys, and then giving them that opportunity to make that choice. I will tell you, it has been very popular with those occupations, those jobs where we have given them that choice. About 90% of them have taken it. I like it for lots of reasons. Again, it allows us to give a pay increase. It allows our employees and our supervisors to be more responsible. It allows us to in our reviews to incentivize the best parts of the job and make sure we're getting the best employees possible. And so I think it's a win-win. The downside is, again, for employees, if you're asking for kind of a downside, it does make it easier for employment termination. But it makes state government jobs just like every other job in the state of Utah. And I think that's a positive thing, that we reward the best performers. And in those very rare cases where we have some really bad performers, it makes it a little easier to move on from the worst employees. But it's we've done it a couple times, and again, it's been very, very well received. You haven't seen, I mean, there we haven't just terminated people. That was never part of the intention. And I think those that have been on it for a couple of years would report back that it's been very positive.
Governor, next listener would like to know your thoughts on the growing gang situation. Is there a growing gang situation, Governor? What is your perspective on gangs?
Good question. Do we have gangs in the state? Yes, we do, for sure. This has been a problem for decades. We have amazing law enforcement officials throughout the state. We have great partners in local government as well. We have gang task force units that work that try to infiltrate these gangs and prevent. Again, the worst things from happening. I don't know that it's a growing problem, other than we are a growing state, and so everything, of course, is growing. And again, I'm not saying there isn't an issue. There is an issue, but we have great people that are working on it, and we're constantly trying to improve and eliminate gang violence here in the state of Utah.
All right, Bud is on the line in Torrey. Good afternoon, Bud. What is your question?
Oh, hi. Are you there, Governor Cox?
I am, Bud.
Hi, this is Bad Bud Pace from Torrey, Utah. Are you truth or are you eternal darkness? Because Torrey Town broke the law, Huntsman's employee flying drugs into Utah, Christopher Heiser, Russell M. Nelson's general temple coordinator, death threat guy. It's called the Second Coming.
But I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. It seems like you might need to get a little help out there. I hope you're doing okay, and I hope you find some joy.
Next listener, Governor, let me see, where are we here? They want to know what is being done to get a freeway from east to west in the southern end of Salt Lake County between, say, 106 and 134th. Is there any plans for that?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good plan, a good question, and something that we are working on. So UDOT has been working again as we look at some of these east west corridors and some of the issues that are out there. I know we had a texter who was interested in Pioneer Crossing, Lehigh, and Saratoga Springs as we head into the southern end of the Salt Lake Valley. There's been so much development in those areas, and of course that translates into more traffic. We do traffic studies every year, and it was really remarkable. If you look kind of down at the Lehigh area and then the southern part of this valley, most of those corridors weren't supposed to be at capacity until 2028 and 2029, and they were at capacity in 2018, just 10 years ahead of the intended timing there. So there are some big improvements that are planned in that part of the state. 2100 North in that area with construction likely beginning in 2026. We're trying to work on our east-west corridors. One of the challenges is that, of course, that east-west travel can be very difficult. There are local homeowners who are trying to access developments in Lehigh. We have Saratoga Springs and Eagle Mountain. Of course, we have the growth that is happening out in Harriman as well. So we're lots of changes that are happening out there. Again, in northern Utah County, UDOT is planning to convert 2100 North to a freeway that will really improve the traffic flow there. And so we are constantly designing and redesigning these areas, trying to keep up with the growth that's out there.
1 minute left here, Governor. The last question for you. This person's wondering if Utah could allow tiny house communities for seniors who have a limited income.
Yeah, great question. I've been very interested in the tiny house movement out there. We actually have a project that we're working on with Salt Lake City, tiny houses for some of our homeless population, some deeply affordable housing. I think we're going to learn a lot from that. I would love to see it more extensively. I would love to see cities and towns get a little more creative with some of their some of their growth and some of their decisions around zoning to see if we couldn't make things much more less expensive for new families and for our seniors.
All right. Headed anywhere fun for vacation, Governor?
I wish. We have a trade mission. We'll head to the Paris Air Show, which is really important to us. It's the biggest air show in the world, and we have the fastest growing aerospace industry in the country. So it's not a vacation. It's a lot of work, but a very great part of the world to do a little work.
Wonderful. Thanks, Governor.
Thank you.
Have a nice summer. We'll see you next month for Let Me Speak to the Governor.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.